Uninvited Guest, a Good Omens podfic, written by Entangled Now and read by Jupp. Chapter 4, The Waking World. Crowley is definitely not going to go back to sleep. Instead, he's sitting on his couch at 5 in the morning, staring at his bandaged foot and holding a cup of coffee that's now probably too cold to drink. It doesn't even really hurt that much. It's just a vague throb that tells him he's done something stupid, and to maybe not go for any long walks anytime soon. All things considered, he could have done a lot worse to himself than treading on a smashed mug in the middle of the night. Though, to be honest, it might have been worth it. Aziraphale fell. That soft pillow of a man, appearing like something out of a dream, with one of his warm hands folded around Crowley's arm, and the other resting just on the curve where shoulder became neck. A gentle grip of fingers that had squeezed Crowley all the way out of sleep. It's been a very long time since he'd had anything so nice to wake up to. He's been smiling while Crowley tried to focus, disoriented and half convinced he was still asleep, until he'd registered that ow, and also no one should look that adorable leaning over you at 4 in the morning, smelling like comfort and fancy tea and hours-old faded cologne. Crowley wouldn't have minded if the whole thing had been a particularly good dream. Wouldn't have minded spending a while longer in it, minus the gruesome foot injury. He's had a few of those dreams where his neighbor's concerned, not explicit, but definitely suggestive. He's woken up with his face smashed into the pillow with half-fading images of that stretch of a smile that never quite looks real turned in his direction. All those nervous hands sliding up the bare skin of his spine. Crowley's own fingers testing if that pale hair was as soft as it looked, not even trying to resist the urge to press his face into it. Maybe even warm hands sliding round Crowley's waist and encouraging him to curl in and do exactly that. But no. It had been his very real, very lovely neighbor, with his impossible hair and his bow tie and his dimples and eyes and soft voice, holding Crowley's cross-bleeding foot like some sort of reverse Cinderella. As if sleepwalking wasn't bad enough, he's now proving that he's perfectly capable of horribly injuring himself at the same time. To make it all worse, he just sat there like an idiot, while Aziraphale knelt in front of him in those suddenly very tight trousers, material stretched across the most beautiful thighs Crowley has ever seen, while he tipped his foot to assess the damage. So full of kindness and calm that Crowley couldn't have protested if he'd wanted to. Then the man had put those big hands all over Crowley's ankle and instep and toes, carefully washing and disinfecting and bandaging him. He can't remember half of what he'd said this morning, something idiotic probably, but he thinks, if pressed, that he could describe Aziraphale's hands exactly. Crowley had never had a foot thing before. But he was seriously considering whether he had one now. He still has half a sense memory of that angel of a man spreading his toes, thumb gliding down the sensitive arc. He might have a problem. He's also starting to suspect that there might be a very simple explanation for his repeated wandering across the hall and into Aziraphale's flat. Crowley hasn't had sex in a very long time, hasn't had anyone in his bed for even longer. His subconscious seems determined to change that, to get him out of his cold, lonely flat, to take the initiative and find someone to call up to. Damn it! Now he's going to think about that soft voice, purring things in his ear, while he has a wank in the shower. He knows he is. He's not even going to feel bad about it. It's too inevitable. All right, maybe he's going to feel a little bit bad about it. He's a terrible neighbor. What seemed like a good idea in the shower, or leaning against the tiled wall feeling the trembling echoes of orgasm, doesn't seem half as clever when he's hovering outside the door of Aziraphale's flat at 8:30 in the morning, dressed nicely enough that he worries that it looks obvious. He'd tried for appealing and decided it looked like he was trying too hard. Then he tried for casual and failed halfway there. His bandaged foot hurts now he's been up and about on it for a few hours, and the thin material of his sock is doing absolutely nothing to protect it from sliding around recklessly in his suddenly uncomfortable boot. Coffee. He's going to invite Aziraphale out for coffee. He has the perfect excuse, even. He was wounded due to his own stupidity, and Aziraphale spent a good portion of the early morning cleaning up his mess. Literally. Crowley owes him coffee. Coffee is owed. It's the least he could do. He wants to be a good neighbor. He wants Aziraphale to have memories of him which aren't just unsettling nighttime invasions and the occasional awkward moment in the hallway. He wants the man to think indecent things about him. It's only fair. He raises his hand to knock, then doesn't. Because, no, he can't make it look like an excuse, or Aziraphale is going to wave him off and insist that it was nothing. And, of course, he doesn't need any sort of payment for services rendered. He was just being a good neighbor, just helping Crowley out. Crowley's the one who's going to add transactional favors into their relationship before they're even properly friends. He's pretty sure that's going to torpedo his chances of getting the man to agree to a non-coffee date in the future, which he's fairly invested in getting. He definitely wants there to be an option of a non-coffee date, or not just coffee date anyway. He probably doesn't even drink coffee. He probably only drinks tea. Crowley's plan is doomed before it's even started. His foot really does hurt. Crowley has asked people out for drinks before, coffee being one of them. Granted, it's been a while, and he's been told in the past that sometimes he played it so cool that people weren't even sure if he was actually interested. Which, no. It was just because Crowley is very good at smashing his own nerves down tightly enough that he could coast through any awkwardness or rejection like the coolest man alive. No vulnerable insights to be seen here. But Aziraphale has already seen him at his most vulnerable, at the most vulnerable a person could be, a dozen times or more by now. Aziraphale probably knows more about him than most people he'd slept with. How is he supposed to play it cool after that? The door to the flat opens unexpectedly, surprising Crowley, into a sort of half-knocking flail, which he attempts to recover from by turning the gesture into a wave. Oh, hey, great timing. I was just about to knock. He sounds like an idiot already, and possibly also a liar. But Xerophil seems like he's actually pleased to see him, mouth turning up easily, and he has very nice teeth. Crowley likes them more than he's liked anyone's teeth. In fact, he can't remember ever noticing anyone's teeth before. Well, obviously he's noticed that they had teeth, but not specifically, not in an appreciative way. Feet. Teeth. He really does have a problem. Crowley, how are you feeling? Is your foot any better?
The foot, right. Yeah, it's good. It feels better today. Thanks again.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear it. Xerophil smiles wide enough to show his dimples, the fluff of his hair pale and soft where the sun hits it through the window.
Crowley knows. He does. The world doesn't have to rub it in.
Did you want something?
He did. God help him. Right. So, yeah. He realizes he's shoved his hands into his pockets and makes himself drag them out again. Let me take you out for coffee or tea. You've been really good about everything. I mean, you've kind of gone above and beyond neighborly duties at this point, what with the medical attention and everything.
Crowley gestures at his foot, as if Xerophil might have forgotten his rude awakening this morning, as if they hadn't already mentioned it twice.
As a thank you, not just as a thank you, if we're going to be, you know, I feel like we should be friends.
He hopes that doesn't sound reluctant. He's trying very hard not to give off the air of someone who's too cool to care here, but he's been playing it that way for so long, it's almost a habit. He wants to be enthusiastic. He wants to seem interested. He remembers that this is how you make new friends, though it's been a while since he did that, too.
I'd like us to be friends.
The most mismatched friends, granted. Xerophil in his bow tie and waistcoat and fancy brogues. Crowley with his black on black sunglasses and face tattoo. Xerophil smiles at him. It's wide, but it still looks surprised and a little nervous. Crowley can't help but feel emboldened by it.
Oh, you don't have to go to any trouble, really. I'm happy to help.
That's kind of the point here, though, isn't it?
Crowley's fairly sure this man is too good for him, but he can't help himself. How insistent is too insistent?
I'd like to buy you coffee, or tea, a croissant, whatever you like. I mean, it doesn't have to be this morning if you're busy. I feel like I caught you on the way out, didn't I? We could always rain-check it for another time.
He doesn't want to veto the idea of coffee, or tea, dammit, completely, if it's a bad time for him. He'll just leave the idea out there, for Xerophil to accept at his leisure. Xerophil fusses with the handle of his bag.
Tea would be nice this morning, I will admit.
He seems happy about it, if still a little nervous, which Crowley thinks might be a good sign. It's not just him. He's not the only one who's interested in making friends.
I don't want to put you out, though.
Nah, I was heading out anyway. Thought I'd invite you. Really, it's the least I could do.
Crowley bites down on anything else. Reminds himself not to make it a transactional sort of thing. Just taking a new friend out for breakfast. A friend he's incredibly attracted to. Breakfast. Aziraphale isn't quite sure how he'd managed to agree to go to breakfast with Crowley. He'd opened the door and the other man had been right outside, all unexpected smile, perfect hair and sunglasses that had left perched low enough that Aziraphale could see the color of his eyes in the light of the hallway. To be honest, Crowley could have said anything, and he probably would have agreed. Which isn't exactly the best sign. The very last thing he wants to do is make the interest he has in the other man obvious. Aziraphale would like them to be friends, not simply because they've fallen into some strange dance of sleepwalker and nighttime assistant. He doesn't have many friends in the city. He doesn't have many friends at all, and he thinks it would be nice. Crowley had looked so pleased when he agreed, and then he'd slipped in beside him naturally, like they go for walks together all the time. Normally, Aziraphale is happy to talk about anything. He relishes an opportunity to learn new things, and he has a passing knowledge in a wide variety of topics. He genuinely enjoys being enthusiastic about other people's interests and hobbies, but his nerves are making the search for a conversation starter something of a challenge this morning. Luckily, Crowley fills the silence, gently encouraging Aziraphale to eventually offer some thoughts of his own as they stroll their way through the city together. Crowley heads in a direction Aziraphale rarely has cause to go, until they reach a small cafe just putting tables and chairs outside. Aziraphale isn't sure that they are open, but the woman smiles and waves Crowley inside. A familiar place, then? Somewhere Crowley can be considered a regular? Something he's more than happy for them to be seen together. Aziraphale can't help but be reassured by the idea of being taken somewhere Crowley enjoys himself. It somehow makes his friendly overtures feel more genuine. The only outings Aziraphale has had in the last 5 years were the occasional lunch with Marjorie, a few trips to visit Anathema, who lives in Tadfield and rarely gets into the city, and one fairly disastrous dinner date with a fellow bibliophile, who turned out to be rather more intense in person than he'd been via the occasional message. One large coffee, no milk, one sugar. One tea with milk and no sugar. And a raspberry Danish that he slurred into after Crowley catches him looking at the display cases. He accepts and gets a smile from the other man that he's never seen before and has no defense against.
"You looked so happy at the sight of it,"
Crowley offers, lifting their cups and following Aziraphale to a table. "It's just a friendly breakfast," Aziraphale reminds himself. "Nothing to get excited about. He'll make a complete fool of himself if he's not careful." Crowley seems content to chat, while Aziraphale uses his raspberry Danish as an excuse to be a little less verbose than he might be. Mostly because he's trying very hard not to reveal how much he's enjoying the shine of Crowley's hair in the early sunlight, or the way he's sprawled in his chair, with some combination of elegance and utter disregard for the human spinal column. He has long hands with nails that show the memory of some sort of dark polish, and one of those interesting faces that you find yourself having to look at twice, and then deciding it has some perfect proportion that you found yourself spellbound by. Also a scatter of freckles that make themselves so delightful in natural light that Aziraphale finds himself worried that his appreciation of them must be horribly obvious. Crowley really can't be much younger than Aziraphale, but there's a flavor to his angles and gentle lines that leaves him seeming so. A mischievous edge to his smile, a brightness to his eyes when the glasses slip low enough to see.
Eventually, there's no breakfast Danish left, and Xerophir finds himself bravely deciding to share a little about himself. Then, more than a little. Then, after Crowley gets the refills, he ends up sharing several scandalous stories about how he'd wrestled his father's antique shop out from under his brother's nose. Gabriel liked the idea of the shop and its success, but he had no interest in any of the work, or the research, or the connections necessary to establish a consensus on difficult pieces. He made several more disastrous appraisals and a few promises that he couldn't keep. I believe he's in America now. Xerophir wishes Gabriel success. He really does. But he'd like it very much if he could do it away from him. He could be something of a bully.
Sounds like the best place for him. No offense.
Xerophir laughs because he can't help but agree.
Oh, not taken. That's a sentiment that I've heard before.
Older brother? Crowley asks.
No, younger.
Xerophir takes a mouthful of tea while Crowley seems to consider this new information.
But being the face of the business suited him a lot better than me, I have to admit. I have an excellent memory and I'm quite happy doing inventory for hours, but I've never been very good at managing the front of the shop, interacting with the public, or of letting go of pieces, if I'm being honest. Marjorie and Newton are excellent at that sort of thing. They are both very friendly and personable people.
Oh, I don't know,
Crowley says, his attention suddenly strangely focused.
I'm finding you very personable.
Xerophir is surprised into a smile at the compliment.
Likewise, Anthony. May I call you Anthony?
Crowley grimaces.
To be honest, I prefer Crowley, he says, leaning back in his chair. Anthony was my dad's name, and it's never really felt like mine.
He pulls a face over his coffee cup.
I don't think anyone who actually likes me calls me Anthony. Might have something to do with it, too.
Xerophir immediately decides to do no such thing unless told otherwise.
Aware that my own name is rather unique, he offers in exchange.
Xerophir,
Crowley says, curling every syllable in a way that leaves him feeling more than a little warm.
Sounds like an angel.
Xerophir spends a moment coughing when a sip of tea goes down the wrong way. Crowley makes apologetic noises and hands him paper napkins. It occurs to him that Crowley has no way of knowing the relevance of that word, which seems so important to his sleeping self.
No, you're quite correct that it was originally the name of an angel. My mother had, I don't want to say virtuous hopes for us, but I do think she secretly hoped at least one of us would join the church.
You are Gabriel, eh?
Crowley looks amused, and Xerophir can't help but be delighted by what feels so much like the teasing of a friend. Talking to Crowley is turning out to be far easier than he'd expected.
Yes, I don't suppose she was too surprised when nothing came of it.
Crowley finishes his coffee and pushes it aside.
You can ask questions if you want, about the sleepwalking. I'm not really sensitive about it. Not really. It's been a long time. It's more just sort of a...
He seems to be searching for a word, but doesn't find it. Offers a shrug instead.
A thing that happens to me. A thing I've always had to deal with.
Xerophir is wiping his mouth with a napkin and hurriedly shakes his head.
Oh, please, only if you want to talk about it. I'd hate need for you to feel like you had to share personal details just because I happened to be a little involved. Rowley raises an eyebrow.
I'd say you're a bit more than a little involved. I'd like to point out that you're tucking me into bed 3 or 4 nights a month.
And Zerafir can't help the way his traitorous cheeks heat under that particular phrasing, which he feels is a bit much, even if it is technically true.
I wouldn't phrase it quite like that.
I think you even made my bed at one point,
Crowley continues.
There were hospital corners.
Aziraphale winces and decides not to share that he's done that more than once.
I am terribly sorry about that. You'd put the entire sheet out onto the floor, and it seemed rude to,
he gestures helplessly,
put you back without ensuring that you'd have something in the way of a restful sleep.
Something of the teasing slides away, and Crowley simply looks fond in a way that Aziraphale tells himself fiercely not to read anything into.
I don't mind, really. I appreciate it. I'm glad that there's someone who's kind about it all. It's been happening since I was a kid, but people haven't always been kind about it.
Aziraphale can imagine. People are so quick to point out differences, to make them weaknesses, and press accordingly. He listens while Crowley talks, while he offers up some of his history and his nighttime wanderings that never stopped. While there are experiences which Aziraphale is certain must have been frightening, Crowley tells them in a way that seems to invite amusement. Aziraphale feels comfortable enough to share his own trouble with sleep, the way it's been so much worse over the last few years, mostly to reassure the man that he's not dragging him out of bed every time, that he's often working at his desk when he breaks his way inside. Crowley winces.
Oh God, I am breaking in, aren't I?
I'm sorry. I'm a sleepwalking burglar.
Well, you're not technically stealing anything.
Aziraphale hurries to reassure him, but then he remembers a few weeks ago, and he can't resist adding,
well, there was the time you tried to take a cushion back into your flat with you.
Crowley's eyes widen.
I did what?
I think you thought it was a pillow you were taking back to bed,
Aziraphale explains.
I did try to convince you to leave it, but you were very insistent.
I didn't.
Crowley looks half amused and half horrified.
You did, but I think that it was heavier than you were expecting, and you dropped it in the hall.
He'd found it very entertaining at the time, but it feels unkind to share that part. The smile is difficult to fight, though.
I'm a criminal,
Crowley decides.
You should have me arrested.
Aziraphale laughs, and he can't help but realize how much he's enjoying himself. How much he would rather like to talk to this man again, every day perhaps, until Crowley gets entirely sick of him.